And now,
you are listening live.
Handoff, Kennedy McCoy cuts it back inside. He's at five, heading to the end zone. He's in, touchdown! Drops, throws, has a man. Ball caught Jennings. Gary Jennings breaks the tackle. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Gary Jennings! And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer, wherever you may be.
Hi, guys. Welcome to another episode of the Smoking Musket podcast and week 11 of the college football season. I am Bart Keeler, recording from outside the heart of college football, to help prepare you for the WVU-Kansas State game this Saturday. Joining me on this podcast is the site manager of www.smokingmusket.com, Mike Miller. How's it going, Mike?
It's going. That's all I can say. It's going.
Did you yell at any cable guys this week?
Yes, I did, actually. I think that's what's going to sustain me for the rest of this college football season. I need somebody to yell at.
Oh, well, Dana had some people to yell at last week, that's for sure. I don't know if anyone else saw his berating of the side judges and the other officials during the Iowa State game. It kind of worked.
I mean, I think we've unlocked something here. It kind of makes me feel good. So I guess I'm a terrible person or something, yeah. But.
Well, yes. It's okay. Well, other than Mike and I talking about this, to help us look at this WVU-Kansas State game, I'm going to bring on a friend of the podcast and a personal friend and just a great K-State podcaster, Grant Helmy. He used to work for the SB Nation site, Bring on the Cats, but now he does his own thing called the Salute.com podcast, and he will be joining me later on in the episode. But before we get there, we got to take care of some businesses home. Mike, why don't you tell everyone all the great things that they can find from www.smokingmusket.com.
All right. Make sure to like the Smoking Musket on Facebook. Follow us at Smoking Musket on Twitter and go to smokingmusket.com for great content on WVU sports. And if you're following our Twitter, it's hard to tell what you're going to get, honestly. we signed Matt Kirstner to a very lucrative contract with SB Nation. And he is only tweeting.
And we now have 280 characters.
He's tweeting only the best 280 character tweets. also, make sure to watch the Smoky Musket Facebook Live review every Monday after the game. Bart's doing a really good job with that, and we're getting a lot of good, interaction with the readers. So that's
hashtag
going really well.
Interaction.
Yeah. I think that, this week we even saw an appearance from Raspy Voice Kids and John Lowe, who is a capital J journalist now.
He's a big boy journalist.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we try to do this. Look, SB Nation is a site by fans for fans, and we're just trying to give our fans perspective, not quite insider knowledge, if you will, but just, you know, some more unbiased, maybe, fan perspective. As unbiased as we can be about WVU sports. And we want to interact with you because we're fans just like you. And there's nothing better than, you know, we want to try to pretend like we're sitting at a bar with other WVU fans just talking. That's the point of this, you know. Keep looking at our site. Check us out on, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, and blogtalkradio.com/Smoking Musket. We'll have all of our stuff there. Mike, any other, anything else that we missed? I don't know if we hit everything or not.
I think that's it.
Awesome. Good. We're doing good. Look at us. We're taking care of business. All right. Well, now that we've taken care of that, Mike, let's talk about some WVU sports headlines.
Let's do it.
The WVU men's basketball team opens the 2017-2018 season in Ramstein, Germany against Texas A&M, part of the Armed Forces Classic. That game tips off at 6 p.m. on ESPN on Friday, which I think is probably when this podcast will come out. So that tonight, if you will. Friday, November 10th. A big game for the Mountaineers to start off their season. Mike, just real quick, get your thoughts on this. I mean, this is a high-level matchup to open up the season. What does this mean for Huggins and crew?
This would be a huge win. And one of their lottery picks, I think, is out for like the first two games. So that's only good for us.
A&M is missing a big time recruit / big time player / potential an NBA prospect. So that is big. And the uniforms we're going to wear are awesome.
Yeah, and a lot of people I've noticed are kind of like running around screaming like their hair's on fire because West Virginia lost to Purdue in like a top secret closed scrimmage last week or this week, whatever it was.
Like a double secret probation.
Yeah, and really it's not that big of a deal because the point of that scrimmage is for Bob Huggins to find out what works on the court. It wasn't to win. I mean, it's a closed scrimmage.
No,
it's a practice.
No. None of these, like,
people were freaking out because, yeah. Oh my God, we lost to Purdue. It's okay. It'll be okay.
Well, that would be like, okay, obviously there would be cause for concern if we lost to Albany, but do you think Bob Huggins cares the fact that we blew Albany out? No. He wants to see what worked, what didn't work, and figure out where we can improve. So, I agree. Whatever. Purdue, they're a decent basketball team that we're just trying, you know, whatever they did worked better that day than we did. Who cares? The women's basketball team also starts their season this Friday at 7 p.m. at the WVU Coliseum against Central Connecticut State. Obviously, that is your defending Big 12 champion WVU women's basketball team. So, if you are in town, go check them out at 7 p.m. at the Coliseum. Also, NCAA tournament time for the WVU women's soccer team. The number 2 seeded Mountaineers start their 2017 NCAA Women's Soccer Championship run on Saturday against Bucknell at 1 p.m. at Dick Dulesk Soccer Stadium. If they win that, they host. They should host the first 3 rounds of play before the College Cup, which is in Orlando City Stadium in Orlando, Florida this year. So, we saw the girls last year make a great deep run into the tournament. Hopefully this year we can get to at least the quarterfinals, maybe even the College Cup again. I think the draw sets up nicely for us with a couple of rematches that we've already won earlier this year. Also, the WVU men's soccer team, will face off against Western Michigan in the first round of the MAC tournament on Friday at 7 p.m. in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And you can watch both the men's and women's soccer teams play on WVUsports.com. They'll have a link on the schedule to say watch and just go there. So that's all the sports headlines I have for you right now. Winter sports are about to kick off, so we'll have more of that and you know, probably some rifle and baseball stuff news coming as well. Was it today or tomorrow that's National Signing Day for basketball? I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure it's
– I think it's today. Thursday? Yeah.
You're right. Okay. So Thursday was National Signing Day for basketball. We will have a really, if you go to our site, www.smokingmusket.com, we'll probably have content for just that recruiting class. Huggins has brought home a couple of good recruits. So I'm interested to see how this plays into the future success of the program. A couple of 4-stars and some other good 3-star recruits. So good job so far by Coach Huggins. That's all I got. I don't know. That's all I have for WVU Sports. I miss anything of importance, Mike?
No, I don't think so.
Good.
It's kind of been like a quiet week, which is always good. Oh, wait. There is something I want to talk about, like, real quick.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, just real quick. This article that came out from, I think it was like, I don't remember who wrote it, about Pat White and Steve Slayton not feeling welcome in the program. Can we just say that maybe, yeah, okay, they're both legends at WVU. Yes, they deserve to be respected by the program and stuff. But maybe Pat kind of dug his own grave with all those tweets against Dana a couple seasons ago. That could have played an impact on this. But don't run around acting like you're the victim. Like, this is completely different, like, staff from top to bottom.
Absolutely.
Like, maybe the only person here was Mike Joseph, the strength coach. He's the only one that it was like, because he was here for Stewart, Bill Stewart, right?
Yeah, I think so. Was Alex Hammond there, around there too? I forget if he came in with Dana.
He came in with Dana, I think.
That's right. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, look, it doesn't – obviously you want to embrace your really good past, you know, stars. and Steve Slayton and Pat White were certainly one of those. Specifically Pat White, the only quarterback to start and win four bowl games in his college career. But don't act like you're, you know, don't act like you're immune to criticism, one, and two, like you just own the place, because you're right. It is a new regime, if you will. That doesn't mean that we can't use them in terms of, you know, being good to recruits and showing them off and like, but you know, if you make statements about a former teammate or a former coach or a coach at your current place, like, what do you expect to happen?
I think it was a Bob Hertzel article too. So,
well, there you go.
It was, So
there, yeah. So take it for what it's worth. But, yeah, it's the same thing with Skyler, like calling out fans. It's like, well, Skyler, don't call out fans if you don't like want to be called out yourself. You're just heaping more pressure on yourself. Well, let's leave that behind us and talk about a decent thing. If you watched my Facebook Live review from Monday, you heard me talk about West Virginia versus Iowa State. Obviously, West Virginia prevailed 20-16. However, it wasn't like super great. But I mean, we beat an Iowa State team that picked off OU and TCU. So just it's a good win, right? Like, how do you feel about that win?
It was a very good win. I mean, they were a top 15 team. I mean, you don't just get a top 15 ranking. Yeah, I mean, it is Iowa State, but they have knocked off some good teams. Like, they deserve to be where they were. And
they're bowl eligible.
They didn't look terrible against us. I mean, they were, you know, making the comeback.
Well, and I mean, look, obviously West Virginia had a really, really good first half. I mean, that was kind of the first half we talked about. They had 20 points at the end of the half. Personally, I do think Evan Staley's missed field goal at the end of the half to make it would have been 23-0. If he makes that field goal, it's a completely different ball game for a lot of reasons. One of those being the way that the Iowa State would have had to go for it on 4th-and-1 from the goal line and just a lot of other things. But 20 points in the first half was what you and I said we needed to do. Iowa State is not a prolific offense. And, you know, getting 20 points in two quarters is pretty much what West Virginia needed to do to set the tone of the game. I mean, just a couple of thoughts about that first half, why we were so successful.
I don't know if I can – well, I mean, Justin Crawford, you know, he had a reemergence there. He broke 100 yards on the day for the first time in, like, four games, I think, or three games, maybe.
Yeah.
And just – Will Greer seemed to shook, I guess, whatever was bothering him last week. He kind of got out of his own head. I think that was part of his problem the week before. I think he started, you know, overthrowing or, you know, missing his receivers against Oklahoma State? Yeah. And I think he maybe kind of got in his own head. But I think he took care of that this last week against Iowa State. And the offensive line was playing a lot better. And really, in the second half, I think we saw our defensive line grow up a ton.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, so we had a really good first half, obviously, but the second half we scored 0 points and Iowa State scored 16. Now, Dana talked about it, how that team is prone to comebacks and they're never going to quit, but I don't think our team quit, but what happened to both our offensive and defensive production in that second half?
I don't know. It's like we just fall asleep. We get up, and then we fall asleep. We just kind of – I mean, on both sides of the ball. Now, granted, the defense did wake up, thankfully.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, we talked about it a little bit last week and the weeks before. When our offense is not able to hold on to the ball, our defense is going to struggle. And the offense had, you know, not a lot of, like, necessarily three and outs, but we had some drives in, and we didn't score points, and we had chances to score points in the second half. And that's not fair to the defense to say, hey, guys, you get to shut these guys out for two halves in a row. I mean, sure, a great defense is going to do that, but we know our defense is not great. Our offense has got to still score points. I mean, you can't go two whole quarters without a point.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there.
I mean, I don't know if it was play calling, because I don't think of the play calling bad. Obviously, Iowa State went to four in the box, or four in the line, and loaded the box up a little bit. But so is that Will Greer needing to say, oh, okay, let's use this, you know, matchup advantage on the outside? Is that Spavital not recognizing that but still being stubborn?
I don't know what that was. There was one time that stuck out to me, like, really badly. Like, it was like fourth and one or fourth and two or something, and the commentators even said, like, Iowa State's putting four on the front line. West Virginia's got to throw it here. They're not going to run against this front four, and we tried to run against the front four, and it didn't work.
And like, that didn't work. Yeah. I think this comes to a little bit of the creativity in the offense that is lacking, and I think we've talked about it. Definitely in the run game that's lacking, but I think overall we just haven't seen the most creative offense. Maybe that is Spavital in his first year as a true offensive coordinator here and learning Will Greer and learning his players. But it's frustrating that we can score 20 points in one half, which, you know, isn't like super great, but that's a really good output, and then go two quarters straight without scoring.
And I will say we were close to scoring another touchdown because, I mean, David Seals made that catch like all the time so far this season.
Yeah.
So
that was both a good play by the Iowa State cornerback, I think it was, and just luck. I mean,
that's a 50-50 ball. Sills he's caught almost all of those this season. I mean, that was a great play by Iowa State there. So
a lot of people didn't like the play call, but I liked it. I mean, what do you have to lose? Go for it. You know, you were almost in field goal range, I think, in my opinion. Or at least close enough on a fourth down where you could have gone for it on fourth down, if I remember correctly. And so what if you take a shot to the end zone? That's the time to do it. If you're successful, there are three options there that could happen. Well, maybe four. One, okay, Will Greer gets sacked. Okay, cool. We just punt the ball away. Waste time, punt the ball away. Two, incomplete pass. Okay, fine, whatever, incomplete pass. Three, okay, the interception is possible, but if you've got single coverage on and Will Greer fell into David Sills, interception isn't something you're afraid of right there. Or four, you score a touchdown, the game's completely done. So, you know, is it the most high percentage play? No, but I still like our chances to do that 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, I'm not mad about the play call there.
No, why not? That's my thought. But, I mean, looking forward, what do you think this win means for the team? Obviously, we are bowl eligible, and Dana talked about how that wasn't something the team was, like, really hyped or talking about, but that counts for something, right?
It does, and I think it's another, I guess, instance for the team to kind of gel together a little more. Like, this team, I mean...
Yeah.
After the Oklahoma State game, like, everybody had this weird theory that Dana had lost the team. Like, I think even Rashid said something on the after show about how the team didn't respect Dana and all that. Did you see the pictures after the Iowa State win? Like, Dana's right there in the middle. They're rallied around him.
Yeah.
It's another opportunity for this team to come together. And I think it's going to pay off. I think we're going to see him play better this Saturday. It's confidence building.
So. Yeah, I mean, look, this is not an achievement that we need to celebrate necessarily, but it is one of those things that when you are making your list of goals for the season, bowl eligible is the first thing that you would write, right? If you're going from least expectation to greatest expectation, bowl eligibility is the minimal expectation you have, right?
Yeah.
So, hey, you got 6 wins, you're going to bowl game. At the very least, good, okay? Now you can build off of it. And like we've said all along, the team had bowl eligibility. It was just a matter of how high up in the ranking, in the pecking order, we can go. Some people are putting us back in the Camping World Bowl against Virginia Tech, which would be kind of fun. Some people have us in the Texas Bowl. Some people have us even maybe at the Alamo Bowl, just depending on how things shake out. So there's a lot that we can do. And again, you know, 6-6 gets you maybe the Cactus Bowl or the Liberty Bowl. And we don't want that. No offense. We just don't want, you know, Cactus Bowl, Heart of Dallas Bowl. We don't want that. So now you get a chance to go out there, get 7-8 wins possibly this season, maybe 9. Who knows? And make a good bowl game.
I really want that Virginia Tech matchup. I want that rematch.
I would love that too. Yeah.
Because I really think we would beat them this time because Virginia Tech is kind of like, I think they've plateaued this season. So,
well, I don't think that was their best they played against us, but that certainly was not the best we played all season, defensively or offensively. And I think given another rematch with a better offense, I like our chances there. Before we break and bring on Grant Tomey, let's take a look at the Big 12 standings, Mike. Oklahoma at number 1, 5-1, 8-1 overall. They have a huge matchup coming this weekend against the number 2 team in the Big 12, who is TCU. They are also 5-1, 8-1 overall. 3-4-5, all at 4-2. It's Oklahoma State at 7-2 overall, Iowa State at 6-3 overall, and West Virginia at 6-3 overall at the 5 spot. Kansas State, who we play this Saturday, is the number 6, 3-3, 5-4 overall. Texas at 3-3, 4-5 overall is in 7th. Texas Tech, 1-5. Man, they have not done well in Big 12 play. 4-5 overall. And Baylor at 1-5, 1-7 overall is in 9th. They finally got that win over Kansas, which, whatever, I have feelings about that. It's fine. And then Kansas at 0-6, 1-7 overall. Baylor finally beat Kansas. I'm not quite sure how I wanted to win that game. That was weird. But that's where the Big 12 looks. Mike, is it OU's to win, or do you think TCU can like still has a lot to say?
I don't know. TCU's kind of plateaued, it seems like, this season too. I really hate saying it's Oklahoma's to win. I'm tired of Oklahoma winning the conference. But realistically, I mean, it's Oklahoma's to win. Now, we're not out of conversation. We have to have some cards fall our way. Starting with Iowa State really needs to beat Oklahoma State this weekend, which would be amazing.
Well, and I mean, look, you went out, you've got a good shot.
Yeah, we have to take care of ourselves first and not worry about everybody else.
We only have to be in the top two.
Yep.
So, you know, you don't have to be the number one team in the conference anymore. You just have to be in the top two to make the trip to Arlington. Let's break real quick. We'll go talk to Grant Tomey from the Salute podcast about this Kansas State football team that's had a lot of changes and weirdness this year. And then we'll come back and give our takes on this game coming up on Saturday.
By Godders, welcome to the Smoking Musket podcast. You heard Mike and I kind of talk about last week's game a little bit. A big win for West Virginia over Iowa State. But the team we're playing this weekend also came up with a nice win over the Texas Tech Red Raiders. And that is the Kansas State Wildcats. To help break down this Kansas State team with me is Grant Tomey. He's a great friend of the program. And he's got some new stuff going on. Grant, introduce yourself and tell the folks what you've got going on for Kansas State podcasting.
Yeah, Bart, thanks for having me on. It's been, I think, 2 years now since I shut down my own website, emaudio.com, but I had run that for 3 years, and it was podcasting only. And I'd recently joined up with the folks over at goparacat.com, and they gave me an opportunity to sort of rebirth the show, the emaudio podcast, and so you can find it on there and on SoundCloud as well.
Well, I mean, you've covered the Big 12 and specifically Kansas State, but you've covered the Big 12 a lot longer than I've even been a part of it. Just real quick, your take on how the Big 12 has shaken up this season.
Well, certainly not as anyone would have scripted it. Now, one of the things I used to love doing with my old website, and then in the meantime, in that little stint where I wasn't doing my thing, I did podcast for landgrantgauntlet.com, the Big 12 website. And I used to love, I did over the summer, and that's how I got to know you guys, and was a summer series where I'd preview each of the Big 12 opponents. And I used to like that because I felt like I could handicap seasons really well when I did that. And this was the first year I didn't do that. And I remember going into this season thinking, you know, everybody wants to just take what they know from last year with TCU and Texas and even Iowa State to some degree. But I felt like those were some of the biggest wild cards heading in this year, where I didn't feel comfortable viewing TCU as like a 7-win team, because I was one of the ones who was really high on them last year.
Yeah.
And I thought they had some bad breaks. Now, even that being said, there's no way in heck I thought that they would be, you know, on their way to being a one-loss team, maybe making it to the championship game.
I mean, it's right there for them. It's right there for them.
And obviously, Iowa State. I thought they would obviously make a big jump from last year to this year, but not like the way it's looking either.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it at the beginning of the year on our podcast here at the Smoking Musket, just how we kind of need Iowa State to be more competitive because it makes us look good. You know, you don't like to have basically what would have been this year, three gimme games, and that could be Kansas, Baylor, and Iowa State. You want them to be competitive. They're a little more competitive, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, to say the least. Although, I will be curious to see how the rest of their season shakes out.
Yeah.
That's the final game for both Kansas State and Iowa State. Mm-hmm. And so I certainly want them to get beat up by the time we play them. So maybe we have a chance.
Yes.
I never thought I'd be saying that because I was borderline close to saying Kansas State was, I was almost going to say a guaranteed 10-win team. Now that would have included a bowl game if you would have caught me like in late August. I was really close to saying I thought this team would be a 10-3 team.
Well, I mean, this Kansas State team is weird. They clearly, even when Jesse Ertz was quarterbacking this team, they weren't the typical Bill Snyder coach team from what we were used to seeing. Why this year has it been so challenging for the Wildcats?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and there's no way of really knowing, but a popular hypothesis out there and one that I subscribe to is, you know, with Bill Snyder being diagnosed with cancer, actually, he was seeking treatment during bowl season last year, that was when he was first diagnosed. The news gets out, of course, later in the year. But that just kind of made, I think, the summer months a little bit different. He was heading to Kansas City for treatments on a regular basis and leaving the more duties behind to the assistant coaches. Now, in his second stint here, after the Ron Prince experiment, he had done a really good job of starting to delegate more and more and more as he got older. But I just feel like, as you know what it's like in like school group work or out in the professional world when you have to do group work and nobody like steps up to the plate and says, I will be the one go-to person, the one leader in this little group.
Right.
And everybody, you kind of just fumble around for a while. I kind of feel like as he maybe handed over more responsibilities, you still kind of needed one point person, and that person was never designated. And I think that's sort of trickled down into just a little bit less discipline, just a little bit less organization, a little bit less of everything. Yeah. That you don't see the team kind of buying into or getting just a little bit better each week as we're so accustomed to.
Well, I mean, you're 5-4 right now. Obviously, it could be a struggle to get to bowl eligibility. Now, this weekend seems to be a pretty decent chance for y'all to win, but the question comes down to who's going to be playing quarterback for the Wildcats. Obviously, we said Jesse Ertz has been out. He suffered an injury and hasn't really come back, and now we've got Alex Delton possibly with an injury. He looked like he was coming into his own. Is Skylar Thompson the answer? Is Alex Delton the answer? What is your quarterback situation like in Manhattan?
If I was a betting man, I'd say 95% sure Skylar Thompson will start the game on Saturday. Alex Delton against KU suffered what appeared to be a concussion. And then he took a shot to the head again against Texas Tech, and that's why he left the game. So we all know how that is. It's one thing to get the initial injury. You can sometimes recover from the initial injury fast, albeit a concussion or anything else. But then you're more likely to, when you suffer that exact same injury a second time, it takes a heck of a lot longer time to recover from that. And so I just don't see any way possible that Alex Delton comes back this week.
Well, I mean, I don't know what the big differences are between Skylar and Alex, but I mean, kind of break down how different of quarterbacks they are, because it seemed like Delton was a little bit more of the Jesse Ertz type quarterback, but I mean, what's the big difference between this Delton and Thompson?
Alex Delton, so really, like, if you, they were, you know, they're 1 year apart in recruiting classes, and if you looked at their tape or you looked at what They were both borderline four-star recruits, depending on which outlet you looked at. Delton certainly more of the three-star type, and Skyler had more four-star consistent accolades. But they really said a lot of the same things about both of them. However, when it's manifested itself at the college level, it appears Alex Delton, he can throw downfield, but he certainly needs his time to step into the throw, and he needs that protection, whereas Skyler Thompson seems to be a lot more natural-born thrower where, I mean, he can almost flat-foot get the ball where he needs to, and he's got pretty ridiculous accuracy from the limited sample size we've seen so far. But Alex Delton, on the other hand, I believe has a higher ceiling from a running standpoint. He has a little better top-end speed, and he's a little bit bigger of an athlete that can take the hits. But all things considered, since we're more than likely down to our third-string quarterback in Skyler Thompson, it'll be interesting to see how much of the quarterback run game his coaching staff requests, knowing that there's nobody else really available.
Well, I mean, we'll stay on this offensive side of the ball. Clearly, this will depend on who actually is starting. But, I mean, Kansas State offensively this year has been pretty good. I mean, you've had, what, five games of almost 40 points or more. Defensively, given up some points. But offensively, it seems like this has still been a pretty decent year for Kansas State. What's made it so, I don't want to say dynamic, but, you know, high scoring?
Well, it's really hard, if you've been following the team the whole year, it's really hard to buy into that. But statistically, they are ahead of where they were
weird.
Last year. But, I mean, you go back to that Vanderbilt game, the TCU game, which, I mean, obviously TCU is going to shut down a lot of teams. But it wasn't quite to the KU levels of 21 yards of total offense.
Right.
But there weren't too many first downs occurring. And the offensive play calling in the first half of the season was just atrocious. Like, man, that TCU game was rough. Just, and the Vanderbilt game, it just seemed like we were just trying to just pull the wool over their eyes by running the exact same play as the last one. And like, it was obvious there seemed to end up being no second half adjustments in the third quarter. We've just been horrible as a third quarter team. And so, you know, if you really look at the games, we were super benefited by the first two games. We scored 55 points in each. So that's obviously where a lot of that brunt comes from. And then, you know, putting up 42 points. You also have to take in consideration last week's game was the second overtime game.
This is true.
Two extra quarters to, granted, that's only 25 yards you're really ever going to accumulate. But, you know, we have played some extra quarters as well.
Well, I mean, offensively, you do look like you're able to score points. I understand your qualifications, but on paper, I mean, the points are there. Obviously, this Big 12 slate, you know, 3-3 for the Wildcats, 4-2 for the Mountaineers. This is kind of one of those tilt games in the Big 12. I mean, if Kansas State gets a win, and that puts them even with West Virginia, and we're kind of in that middle of the pack in the Big 12, but I mean, obviously Kansas State battling for bowl eligibility right now. What's the mindset right now in Manhattan as West Virginia comes to town?
Well, I think I said it on my show. This game feels actually a heck of a lot like last week's game, where it's within reach for K-State.
Absolutely.
But I have to go out. I have to see him go out and get it. And I think what's encouraging when you talk about mindset of this team heading into this game is what winning a game on the road in overtime does for a locker room morale. I mean, you know, there was a viral video of the celebration in the locker room. That's the kind of thing that was lacking for the longest time when K-State came out and almost took down Oklahoma. Like, that was one of the first times all season I saw a real, like, want to, emotion, pride, anything on the sideline. And I feel like, so if you ask about this week, I kind of wonder if they've been able to finally buy into themselves and kind of take some of that energy, some of that, all that feel good from last Saturday and apply that throughout this week of practice and now see, okay, we're finally starting to play like we thought we could.
Well, I mean, it seems like, and I agree with you, I mean, you had those three games in a row that you kind of slid off and then finally get back on track two in a row, but Talk to me about this defense that's been giving up a lot of points. And I it's kind of the same with the offense. You had a couple, you know, you had some overtime games, but really defensively, this has been a suspect Kansas State defensive backfield, has it not?
Yeah, no, that goes without saying. But one of the interesting things I looked up before because I anticipated a question like that. So nationally, they're 126th in pass defense. But
no,
what
that's
I was
great.
Which what I was surprised to find, though, was how many Big 12 teams are very close to that.
Yeah, we're not great.
Texas Tech is 122nd nationally, KU's 120th nationally, OSU, which surprised me, is 117th nationally, Baylor's 116th, OU is 109th, and then it finally jumps to 93rd for UT. That's 7 out of the 10 teams are in the bottom 90 to 130.
Well, you know, that's just because the Big 12 has no clue how to play defense. Come on now.
Well, they don't. They don't. No, but for K-State specifically, what's interesting is I don't know how I can say this. I feel like everybody would observe me as having the purple shades on when I say this, but I really feel good about our cornerbacks.
Okay.
Like, I feel like I can trust them in one-on-one coverage most of the time.
Okay.
But I feel like the middle of the defense, from the linebackers through the safety position, I feel like those corners don't get the help they need, that you can't rely on anybody for the entire game to be on an island all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
And what's really crazy about it, though, is like as the offense has gotten better, and, well, I say gotten better, but that KU game, which is only 2 games ago, was atrocious. as the offense seems like it's finally starting to, you know, maybe they're trusting the players more with play calling, being a little more dynamic, it seems like the defense has regressed in the similar rate. Like the first half of the season, the defense was stealing the show. You know, we held Vanderbilt to 14 points, and just Kendall Adams, who's one of our safeties, was one of the stars, one of the playmakers early on. He got hurt and wasn't available for the OU game, and so we had to throw a backup in there. And I feel like the defense or the secondary has never been the same. Kendall Adams did come back for the KU game and did play in the Texas Tech game, but he's kind of been a no-show now, and it's just whatever that injury was, I feel like has made a lasting impression. And opposite of Kendall Adams is a first-time defensive player, Denzel Goolsby. He's an athletic kid, real heady guy, understands the game well, but you can still see instances where he's got some lessons to learn. And so I feel like with Kendall Adams not playing at his top, more pressure's put on Denzel Goolsby in the first year in his position. And again, I think as a collective unit, kind of the whole secondary is breaking down a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's not like West Virginia's had too much better success defensively. We've managed to put together some games that we looked pretty good, but on the whole, it's been a little scary for us. I feel like both of these teams need this win for different reasons. Obviously, Kansas State needed to get to the bowl eligibility, and I think you're in the same boat that we are. It's not something to celebrate, but it's one of those like minimum requirements for a season, and you just you want to get there, and it's like, whew, okay, we got there. But for West Virginia, it's one of those like, okay, we got there. Now, how much can we get up? And obviously for us, the Big 12 championship is still technically in our reach. You know, we can make it. I mean, what's your first initial take when looking at this game? What do you see this game shaping out to be?
Well, it's very much related to the last topic. I don't think Will Greer's going to have a problem finding an open receiver on Saturday. I know that, and the other thing that's surprising to me when I look at West Virginia is that, you know, everybody tries to compartmentalize these offenses and try to say they're the same between an Oklahoma State, a Texas Tech, and a West Virginia. But Dana Holgorsen has done a tremendous job of being pretty balanced with the run game and the pass game. And so what surprises me is, you know, I'm just used to like a three-headed monster from you guys, but it seems like it's really Justin Crawford and not a whole lot else. So I feel like if K-State can make West Virginia be one-dimensional, Will Greer is still going to get his yards through the air. But I feel like that's going to be their best chance of kind of limiting West Virginia and just hope that because you guys have so many starters out on the defensive side that you can keep pace, that the K-State can keep pace points-wise. And again, I don't see a scenario where K-State's able to ice West Virginia like Iowa State did last week in the second half. If K-State wins it, I really feel like it's going to take a very similar shape to last week's Texas Tech game, maybe 42-35 kind of thing. Okay. And K-State's not necessarily really meant to be a shootout team, but I feel like that's the only scenario in which K-State could win.
Well, I mean, I understand what you're saying there in that if you can hold us to, you know, a one-dimensional offense, and teams have been able to do that this year, that's where we struggle. Obviously, Will Grier is not too far removed from a four-interception day against Oklahoma State. I tend to think that West Virginia wins, but I'm also really scared, and talking about this with other Mountaineer fans, we finally got over that hump of beating Kansas State last year, but it doesn't feel like we did anything. You know, it took a miracle. It was like this really weird, like, whoo, we beat them, but did we really? you know, I mean, it was a 17-point comeback. It's tough. And going to Manhattan makes me very, very nervous. I think we win, but I mean, it's going to be – a lot of these projections have the game as like a two-point spread. I don't know if it'll be that close because I think that's like super close. But, man, it's got to be – it's going to be really close, and I think it will come down to a final possession. I think someone will have a chance to win it, and depending on who has it depends on how the outcome will be.
Yeah, I was surprised to see those early lines. I really didn't expect K-State to be a favorite. I mean, if I was the betting type, which I don't know why I say that, because I need Oklahoma State to win this week. I bet on their season win total when I was on vacation this year, so I do have a ticket in my hand. But anyway,
How's the wife feel about that?
Well, she's just happy that the sportsbook didn't have K-State on the books because I was going to bet the over on 8 wins. Yeah, so that would mean they have to win everything. So thank goodness that sportsbook didn't have them because I was going to drop some money on that. I don't know. I think West Virginia has to be the stronger team heading into the game. So I don't know why they're not the favorite.
Hey, man, Kansas State, it's Manhattan. You know, things can happen there. A couple more questions before I get ready, Vid. Just, you know, real quick. Obviously, we talk, I mean, Grant and I talk Big 12 football all the time. We talk college football as a whole. Looking at the college football playoff, the Big 12 seems to be getting not a whole lot of love in terms of being a great conference. It's like, oh, that's cool. You're cute. You try. Here's a 5 and a 6 spot. But, I mean, do you think the winner of the TCU-Oklahoma game, like, they have to be in the top 4, right?
Yeah, you'd think so. I mean, the clarity should come pretty quickly, though, you know, with Notre Dame playing Miami. Something has to get shaken up there one way or the other. You know, and Georgia plays Auburn, so, you know, some silly stuff can happen there as well. But I don't know. I feel like, you know, even if I think out of respect they're leaving a Big 12 team, they're at the 5 spot. And I wouldn't be surprised if – I know Notre Dame's a huge name. Everybody wants to get them –
Yeah, but they're also terrible people.
Well, I say everybody. I mean the machine, the whole hype. I really do think, though, that the 13th data point could come back to bite them.
Yeah.
Because I do think there are, in the same breath, there are bigger motives that I think that's the one message these giant networks who are struggling, ESPN and Fox, to force Notre Dame's hand to finally join a conference. So I think it's really interesting that if you just keep OU and TCU, whoever the winner is, right at the 5 spot, when they have one more chance to get that 13th data point, and then they win in December when Notre Dame's not doing anything, oh, shucks, at the very end.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. You know, I don't know.
We've seen that 13th data point come back to, you know, really make a statement. We've also seen it not count at all. This is my problem with the College Football Playoff Committee. They change every year what they actually care about.
Yeah.
And I don't mean, like, you know, there were tweaks to the BCS formula, but, like, That at least was like, we're gonna like give this slightly more weight. This is like completely different. I mean, this year they're giving. I understand giving a lot of credence to who you beat, but like they seem to completely dismiss the fact that Clemson lost to Syracuse. They're like, well, you know, yeah. They beat Auburn and they beat Virginia Tech. Okay, well, Virginia Tech's, you know, a decent team and Auburn's pretty good, but they lost to Syracuse.
Well, they have the Auburn win, as well as the NC State. Well, the NC State's kind of fizzling out too right now. That Clemson started really hot, and yeah, I would agree. They're probably the one that probably, because they're not at four, are they? Are they at four or
I
three?
I think they're at three, if I remember.
Yeah,
correctly.
They should be at four. If they're still in, they should be the hanging on by their you know, their paws or whatever.
Last question before I get you out of here. Obviously, you know, Manhattan is a fun little college town, obviously better than that other college town that happens to be in that state, right?
Thank you. Yes.
You know, where's the place to go in Manhattan if you know, for our listeners who might be heading there?
Depends. What are you looking for there?
Let's go with food and then late night.
So food, I would say there's like after I graduated, it kind of blew up as a culinary scene. There's a what do they call it? Gastropub. Small plate gastropub called Bourbon and Baker. That's just fantastic, and they have specialty bourbons. That's hence the name, and a little bake shop out in the back that they have like the best cinnamon rolls and everything. That's where I would, if you could only eat one spot. There's also a really good Cajun joint called used to be called Hibachi Hut. They've just now call it The Hut.
Okay.
But they have tremendous cornbread, and which sounds weird. We're nowhere near being able to pull off Cajun food, but the place I went to in Memphis when I went to the Liberty Bowl that was run by someone from New Orleans who got displaced after Hurricane Katrina, and so this is supposed to be the real deal, and it had all these great Yelp reviews, was crap.
Oh. I would
take Hibachi Hut over that place. I don't even remember what it's called. I was so disappointed. Aside from barbecue, Cajun food's like my number two thing. So
yeah, I have that problem too. I love Cajun food. I hate the city of New Orleans, but I love Cajun food.
So nightlife, that one's a little tougher because like the bar scene is just almost every bar has turned over since I've been there.
It's kind of how Morgantown is, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's probably pretty common. There's yeah. like a 10-15 year cycle for college towns, but one of the places that's still there is O'Malley's, an Irish pub, and it's definitely a dive. It's super narrow and skinny, but there's sort of two sides to it as well, and it's just I always love going there. They do great Belfast bombers, and so that would be my recommendation.
All right, so there you go. You got some food and alcohol recommendations there from Grant. Grant, thank you very much for joining me here on the Smoking Musket podcast. Real quick, I'll let you plug all your stuff, and then I'll get you out of here.
Well, actually, you and Smitty owe a return trip.
We do. We do. Let me find a job first, and then we'll start talking about right. going other places.
The clock starts now. You've got 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, you can find me on Twitter at gtcat_emadio, and that's EMAWDIO. As well as my Emaudio podcast, which is featured on gopowercat.com, as well as SoundCloud.
All right. Well, Grant, I appreciate you coming on. Always good to talk to you. And, you know, no matter what happens on Saturday, I know that this is just, you know, these two teams and fan bases are pretty fun. And hopefully everyone stays healthy. That's ultimately what we want.
And as I thought about it tonight, your arch rival was made for you. By God, because it rhymes with a curse word. So hopefully you're going down in flames as we record this.
I hope so as well. Thank you.
All right.
I appreciate it, Grant. You have a great one.
You too.
By Godders, welcome back to the Smoky Musket podcast. Thanks to Grant Tomey for joining us on this episode as a K-State expert. Now, Bart and I are going to give our takes on this game coming up Saturday between West Virginia and Kansas State. And I'm sure we have some scorching hot takes.
Scorching hot. Yeah, Mike, you know, the Mountaineers finally defeated Kansas State last year in Morgantown. It was a come-from-behind 17-16 win that kind of felt like a miracle, to be honest. But now that we've done that, we get to go play Kansas State this year in Manhattan. They're a very weirdly inconsistent team, and not something that looks like a Bill Snyder coach team. But, you know, 3:30 in Manhattan, Kansas on ESPN2, a team that's 5-4 against a team that's 6-3. They haven't been separated by too much this season. This has been the bugaboo for West Virginia for, I would even say even last year. I mean, we got lucky to win, I would have to say. It was a great comeback, but, you know, it was a miracle. So, I mean, how scared are you going into this game?
I don't know if I'm scared.
Just
a little.
Okay, I like it.
Unsure. I think we have this game. Like, I'm not really worried, but there's always, like, a little voice in the back of my head. It's like, maybe it is Kansas State. It is Bill Snyder, and he is a wizard. Okay. Like, you never know what you're getting out of Kansas State.
Yeah. Well, I got to go on to the Bring On the Podcast. That's the K-State SB Nation site podcast. And I was talking to Luke and Brackett over there, and they were telling me that really, and if you watch Kansas State's games, you'll see this. Kansas State defensively has not been very good, and their main reason is because they don't have a great defensive backfield. Well, what does West Virginia have decent of? Well, it's probably wide receivers, and we have a decent quarterback. Now, they have been able to score points at times this year, and I think that's what scares me, is that this team has been able to put up some numbers, but they're still averaging a decent amount of points given up. They gave up 20 to Baylor. They gave up 34 to Texas. 40 to Texas, 26 to TCU, 42 to Oklahoma. They held Kansas to 20, but still gave up 35 to Texas Tech. So, this Kansas State team's given up a lot of points. I'm not saying that we haven't, because we've shown the ability to give up a lot of points too. But I mean, do you think this is one of those games where maybe West Virginia just needs to? I mean, who needs to be the star of the show is the question I have going into this game.
I've got to say the receivers. I feel like it's going to be an opportunity.
Literally all of them. Yeah.
I feel like it's going to be a good opportunity for Will Grier to get back throwing, you know, 5 touchdowns a game, which would be incredible if it happened this weekend. Again, I don't know what's going on with us. I don't know if it's a conscious decision to kind of let up after we get up a certain amount of points. But I really want to see that end. I want to, crush somebody again. just give it to me. That's all I want.
I want to see the exponential growth of a lead. As opposed to, you know, having to take everyone have, you know, brown paper bags for the final quarter of that Iowa State game and just, you know, I don't know what you're either breathing into it or puking into it. I was doing both, I felt like, because it was too much. I mean, really, this team hasn't shown the ability to play 4 quarters. And I'm not saying Kansas State has, but if Kansas State can get back to even a semblance of their disciplined football and play 4 quarters of decent ball against West Virginia, it's going to give us trouble. So one of the reasons for Kansas State's kind of inconsistencies this year, and they lost 3 in a row. They lost 2 Texas, 2 TCU, and 2 Oklahoma. Not, you know, those obviously 2 out of those 3 teams are pretty darn good. Jesse Ertz hasn't been playing, and he got hurt kind of, in the game against, what was it? I want to say it was the Texas game, or maybe he got hurt that week in practice. I forget what my timeline was, but he hasn't played. And kind of the reason why they lost to TCU and why they weren't able to pull it out against Oklahoma. But their quarterback now, Alex Delton, has been playing pretty much all season. He's thrown some passes. He played against Vanderbilt, but really started getting into the game against Texas and has grown up a little bit in the way he's played. Against Texas Tech last week, he was 13 for 20, 167 yards, which is a pretty decent stat line for a Kansas State quarterback. But Alex Delton has the ability to get, you know, to run a little bit, a lot like the Jesse Ertz thing. He ran 27 times against Oklahoma and 19 against TCU. Now, that probably was because in his first couple games as a starter, you know, they're not trying to give him too much to do, and that's really easy, but they've still got this dual threat quarterback, and he's not as tall or big as Ertz, but he's still, you know, a decently sized, you know, Kansas State quarterback. What other things have led to their inconsistencies that you see this year?
I don't know. I honestly have not watched maybe one Kansas State game this season. I did notice their quarterback, Delton, went out with an injury. Well, I guess he took a helmet-to-helmet hit last week, and they brought in a third-string quarterback named Skyler.
Tyler Thompson, he spelled it the right way.
So I guess just quarterback problems have kind of hindered them. Jesse Ertz it feels like he's been there forever.
Yeah, I feel like, and for Ertz, he's been hurt, he's been healthy, he's been hurt, he's been healthy. So even as much as Kansas State's coaching staff loves Jesse Ertz, he hasn't been healthy throughout his entire career at Kansas State. So, you know, clearly they've had to deal with this before. But, yeah, I mean, they played three different quarterbacks for a decent amount of time this year. Thompson clearly is the third stringer, but a little bit better of a passer from what I was told and what I've seen. I mean, they've also committed a lot of penalties, and West Virginia has had this bug bite them. But, you know, how does West Virginia out-discipline Kansas State this week? I mean, is that something that we can do?
It'll be tough because, I mean, Bill Snyder teams are always disciplined. You've got to give them that. I don't know if we can out-discipline them.
Okay.
I mean, we can try. But that's one thing they always have going for them.
Yeah. I'm just looking at, I don't want to give up these stupid defensive penalties when we get a stop and we still have a penalty. You know, we have a pass interference. Or sometimes we'll be rolling and then we get don't have a holding penalty. We don't have a false start. So we did a better job at some of the offensive penalties, I feel like, last week. But defensively, I mean, we've had, face masks and illegal hands to the face and stuff like where it's like, come on, guys. Your job.
I will say, last week, some of those defensive penalties were kind of bullcrap.
They were bogus, yeah.
I mean, because...
Even Tommy Tuberville was like, no, that's not it.
I mean, if Tommy Tuberville's saying, if he's on your side, and I mean, he was probably the worst commentator I've ever heard.
He's bad.
If you can't defend a slant like that, I mean,
barely
brushed against the receiver and got called for pass interference twice, I mean... If you can't defend that way, then, I mean, what's going to stop somebody from just, you know, throwing the slant every play?
Yep. Because apparently you're not allowed to get within an inch of people. I mean, any sort of contact. But yet Iowa State was able to do that to our receivers all the time. Whatever. Not bitter. We won. Move on. I do think there's some of that. It's that a lot of our defensive penalties have come because it's like, come on, guys. I think we have a rep of being, I mean, obviously Elijah Battle and Hakeem Bailey, I couldn't think of his first name for a second there, have struggled and, you know, not quite sure of Mike Daniels' health. Dana was being kind of an asshole this week when it came to the injury report and just said, they're all day-to-day. So maybe that's good. I don't know. Did you read anything into that I'm not reading?
Dana's been, really closed off about injuries. He doesn't like talking about
them. Yes, he has.
I know a certain friend of the podcast has voiced his opinions on Dana being so closed off about injuries. I'm not going to give away paid content, but it's pretty easy to figure out who I'm talking about. But that's something that it's really annoying from a fan perspective, and I guess from a journalist perspective, because on any given Saturday, we have no idea who's going to be out.
Right.
It's a fun game to play. Who's going to be, you know, sidelined this week? And if you watch Twitter, during warm-up, so an hour before the game, the journalists start tweeting, this guy's out, this guy's out, this guy's out.
Yep, this guy.
News to us, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think if we want to really solidify, if we want to make this run, and I'm not going to get ahead of myself here, but if you want to beat Kansas State and Texas and have a shot at beating Oklahoma, you need Mike Daniels back there. He's a playmaker from a turnover perspective, and he actually covers people without committing penalties. I mean, am I wrong?
No, you're right. What was Daniels' injury? Was it a knee? What?
See, that's the other thing. It was that's what it appeared to be, but, you know, they're not even telling us that. So,
I mean, I did see... we follow all, like, pretty much all the players on Instagram, and they're always, you know, doing their little Instagram stories or whatever. And I did see Daniels, I guess, with the team, and he had I don't know what they are. They're like these big leg balloon looking things. They put their legs in. I guess it's supposed to like increase blood flow through your legs and stuff.
Yeah, it helps with blood flow and healing. Yeah.
So I don't know if it's something that, you know, that's going to signal that.
That's also just the normal recovery.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the weird thing that like I love that as fans. You're like, oh God, he's hurt. Like, no, he's just recovering. That's a normal recovery.
Yeah,
process,
on any given week, like our players are always posting, you know, stories with them in the leg things.
Yeah. It would be the same as if, you know, back in the 90s, if we had Twitter, people sitting in an ice bath or a hot tub whirlpool, they're like, oh God, he's hurt. No, he's just recovering. That would be weird. Could you imagine having Twitter in the 90s and like Instagram and like the old baseball players and their like hot tub things? How awesome would that have been?
I don't know if I want to even like think about that because like the world's so different now.
Oh God!
Think about back how stuff was back in the 90s.
Oh, like, fucking hell. I hope you might have to edit that out. Oh man, yeah. I mean, we that would bring a whole new meaning to locker room talk. That's for sure. We would actually know what that is. That's oof. But anyway, so that's the point about these injuries is that you know it's kind of hard to tell. Because everyone is look if you're. At the Division I level, at the pro level, at really at any collegiate level, you're going through recovery almost immediately after you get done playing because that's how you're going to get your body to get back to play at peak physical performance. So it's hard to read into what the problem is because sometimes it is legitimate treatment for an injury and other times it's just a normal part of the recovery process. So, but point is, you know, defensively, we need Mike Daniels back there. I think that's for sure because Balian and Battle have a tendency to get called for, you know, defensive pass interference or defensive penalties. Now, looking at Kansas State, I mean, statistically, they've had the ability to put up some yards. They're not, you know, super great or prolific, a little bit like Iowa State. But, you know, you just have this idea that on the ground they're going to be able to beat you up physically. But apparently their linebacking core, from what I've been told, is not the most adept at going side to side. They're big guys, so they can clog up the middle. So if you're Jake Spavital, are we going to see maybe some, you know, not just simple zone read draw plays or zone read handoffs? Or, you know, do you think this is the week that we might see McCoy and Crawford getting out a little bit, going side to side?
God, I hope so.
I mean, McCoy's quick. Crawford's pretty quick, too, but McCoy is pretty quick. I'd like to see him try to outrun some of these Kansas State, you know, slow wheat field farmers.
I think we're more likely to see Kennedy McCoy get outside and pick up yardage that way. Shout out to Kennedy McCoy for saving the game last week on third and 17 on the delayed handoff.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
How have teams not picked up on that? especially in that particular instance, because it was like, look, third and 17, we don't necessarily want to throw the ball because we don't want to have to, you know, we want to take time off the clock, right? Like, yeah, with our team, you can kind of bet that a short, quick little slant or an out, you know, a stop and go route or a hitch route might do as well and pick up some yards. But like, we still don't want to throw the ball because we don't want to risk stopping the clock, right? Like that would have made sense. So why are you letting the entire middle of the field go and focus so much on our wide receivers? That's great. Thanks for doing it. But, I mean, what else did you think we were going to do? That was a brain fart by Iowa State's defense, in my opinion. I'm glad they did it against us, but, like, yeah, that was – we got – not lucky, but we outsmarted them, I guess, there.
Yeah. Like, I'm just glad it worked. For, like, the first time ever.
Well, it was also in the – it was kind of in a weird situation where, like, it almost could be four-down territory at that point. So, again, it's like just try to pick up a lot here and then go for it on fourth down and hope that you can, you know, get enough for the first down or maybe, you know, punt it away, and they have really bad field position. So I don't know what they were thinking, but yes, thanks to Kennedy McCoy for really saving the game. Alex Barnes is probably one of their better running backs. He has the most carries this season and has, you know, had decent success throughout the season. But he's only gone over 100 yards like twice. He's had close to 100 a couple other times. Alex Delton is right now their second best runner, the quarterback. But like I said, he had two very run-heavy games against TCU and Oklahoma. Now, I think our defense errs on the side of more an Oklahoma defense, but, I mean, we've shown that we can play pretty solidly. So hopefully this is one of those where we can actually keep their quarterback options under control. I mean, that's really what we have to look at here. Kansas State still has a running quarterback. You know, they still are a that QB power and QB option type offense. I mean, is our team equipped to do that? Can we stop them or slow them down?
I feel like we're more equipped now after last week's game than we have been. I think our defensive line, like I said earlier, they grew up on Saturday.
Yeah.
I think we found like the right combination of starters. Ezekiel Rose was lights out.
Yes,
like he was great last week. Lamont McDougal continues to be amazing.
Like he's a grown ass man.
I love that guy.
He's a freshman, but he's playing like a grown ass man on that defensive line. I love it.
And then Reese Donahue. I mean, he's kind of finally emerged.
Yeah. Well, and our linebackers played phenomenally last weekend too, and that they're going to be huge in a game like this where you're playing a quarterback who can run. So someone's going to have to stay on that. Or someone's going to have to stay on that running back who gets the handoff every now and then. So, yes, our defensive line played well, but our linebacking core has really played well the past, 3 weeks almost.
Yeah. Yeah, it started – well –
That David Long fella.
Yeah, that guy.
It started when he came back, to be quite honest.
He's just on another level. Like, he's so good.
He really is. He's affected the way our defense can play. Now, offensively, I mean, I think this is one of those games where West Virginia, it's going to be the same story as Iowa State. You've got to get out quick. But do you think we're going to go to the run, or are we going to, you know, we seem to want to do that pretty much last week. Is that going to be something that you think that we want to try to accomplish again this week? Or is Savital going to say, no, we're going to go with a pass-heavy offense?
I don't know. I feel like he's going to want to throw it. But at the same time, I mean, common sense says we have to, you know, use the run and use it well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I don't – I just never know what to think with Spab. Like, what – I don't know what's going on in his head. I really don't.
Well, yeah, and I'm not quite sure he's figured it out yet. I mean, we kind of knew what Dana was going to play call, and Dana – for the past couple of years of playing, calling plays was very much a, I want to run the ball type of coach, which I mean, you and I liked because it showed a willingness to at least try to be a full offense. I think that's where Texas Tech has been undone in the Big 12 is that, you know, for all these people who say the Big 12 doesn't play any defense. Well, I understand that criticism, but when you look at Texas Tech, their undoing has been the inability to play defense. And teams have been able to stop them. So, you know, if you have defense in the Big 12, which, you know, I think we have a defense, it might not be great all the time, but, you know, I think that we've done a decent job so far this year of at least trying to maintain and control teams. You know, you're going to have success. And I don't know if Kansas State has shown the ability to really control too many teams this year.
Yeah, I don't think they have either. I mean, you can tell, I mean, they are scoring more points, but their defense is giving up a lot of points. They're not doing they're not doing the Kansas State thing. They're not grinding out a game, a low scoring game. Like,
no, they haven't. I mean, they've had, other than the TCU game, all of their conference games have been pretty high scoring, and the TCU game was still, I mean, TCU scored a lot of points. They just didn't. Continuing on this theme though, I mean, you talk about receivers needing to be big. It feels like David Sills has been shut down. And I don't mean shut down in the sense of like, oh my gosh, he hasn't scored or he hasn't been a factor, but teams have been keen on him, haven't he?
Well, I think that's pretty clear. I mean, he had like one or two receptions last week.
Yeah.
Like two or three receptions the week before. We're just not seeing him as effective, and I think it is because people are, or other teams are keying in on him. I mean, he has the ability to make the plays, but
yeah,
it's just,
well, his last, I mean, Oklahoma State, 3 catches, Iowa State, 2 catches. Now, granted, he got a touchdown against Iowa State, 2 catches, 1 touchdown. But at the same time, I'm not concerned. You know why? Caron White is stepping up, you know? Gary Jennings is being his normal self. So this is where we've been talking about how we need other receivers to step up, but maybe it's just we need to make sure that the guys who are in that starting rotation are maximizing their potential too.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we've really seen Caron White, like, blossom in the last, what, 3
yeah.
games?
Yep. And he's looked, for my money, he's looked pretty reliable. And we needed that because for the first couple of games of the season, he was very sporadic and had a tendency to like to drop the ball. Now, he has shown that he can be a deep threat, which is nice, like his brother. He's also shown to be a guy who now can catch that 10-yard out route or 10-yard hitch route and get us a first down, which is something that he really struggled with earlier this season. You know, is this a game where he can potentially have another, you know, 100-yard-plus day?
Oh, yeah. I definitely think it is. Especially if they're going to – if they key in on Sills, the
yeah.
White's going to get – you know, he's going to have more opportunities. And people have noticed that he's come on. I mean, he's now, I guess, a semifinalist or a award watch nominee for the Biletnikoff. It
yeah.
gives us 3, you know, nominees. I mean, we got Sills, White, and Jennings all on that list, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, look, our receivers have done better as Sills has been targeted, and they have to. I mean, granted, some of that is because they're not getting the defensive attention, but they've at least done well. Mike, let's wrap this up. I mean, what are your two keys to this game to win in Manhattan and you know, overcome again a team that has just been a pain in our ass for years?
I want to see another – I'm not even going to say Justin Crawford 100-yard day. I want to see another running back have 100 yards, whether it be Crawford or McCoy.
Okay.
Either one. I think we might actually see maybe it's just something I'm, you know, making up in my head here, but I think maybe we'll see McCoy get more opportunities after he showed last week what he can do. I mean, he proved that he's reliable, so maybe they're going to give him more opportunities, which I'm not opposed to.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I think we need to see a 100-yard game from one of those two guys. And then I need to see a score every quarter.
Yeah.
Not yeah. just get up 20 yeah. points and then take the foot off the gas and try to grind it out. I don't like that. We got to score.
Yeah, no. I mean, I agree with that. I think we need to be offensively consistent all game. I also think that the other key is, you know, our linebackers controlling their quarterback. I don't think that's the defensive line's job just because, you know, they're going to be – if he's passing, then yes, they need to control him. But I think our linebackers need to do a good job of controlling yeah, probably Delton. I'm not quite sure who that will be yet. I don't know if they've pretty sure it'll be Delton, but who knows? It might, you know, it depends. But I think if our linebackers can control their quarterback, because they don't have a whole lot of receivers, they're not going to have 5 wide. They're not even a lot of times going to have, you know, 4 or 3 wide. So hopefully our defensive backs will be able to take care of that, and our linebackers will be free to control the run game and the quarterback run. So I think that is going to be the biggest key. All right, let's make some predictions here.
All right, you go first.
What do you? Well, let's set up this way. So, West Virginia, Kansas State, 3:30 p.m. in Manhattan. ESPN has Kansas State at a 62.7 to 37.3 favorite. The line is 2.5 to Kansas State, which kind of surprises me, to be honest. But basically, that just means it's a toss up at home, and Kansas State being at home gets a slight victory. Bill C's numbers, who hate both West Virginia and Kansas State, has West Virginia at a 2.5-point margin of victory, basically. And I don't think this is going to – I think we cover just because, I mean, 1.5 points is not conceivable in football. But I do think it's going to be a – I think it'll be like 35-31 or 35-30 where Kansas State will have an opportunity to win the game late. And I just don't think their offense is capable of doing that.
Okay. I really haven't given it much thought, but I feel like this is going to work out more in our favor. I don't think this is going to be one of those games where we're, you know, holding on for dear life at the end. So I'm thinking maybe 35-24.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mike's got us at an 11-point favorite. All right. All right. So we both picked us to win. Hopefully that holds true. I mean, if we win or at 7 wins, it looks like a better season. So that would be good. Mike, you want to go around the Big 12 and talk about some of these games coming up?
Yeah, let's do that real quick.
All right. So real quick, Oklahoma State, number 15, Oklahoma State at number 21, Iowa State. Iowa State at home, they've shown the ability to pick off some big name teams. Can they do it again against Oklahoma State? But Oklahoma State is a 6.5-point favorite.
It's going to be tough, but they are catching Oklahoma State coming off really a heartbreaking loss against Oklahoma because, I mean, they had the opportunity to win that game. So it depends on how Oklahoma State's team responds to that. I'd love to see Iowa State win.
It would help us.
Yeah, it would help us. But I feel like Oklahoma State's going to win it just because they have the better offense.
And their defense isn't bad. Everyone knocking Oklahoma State for giving up 62 to Oklahoma. And then in the same breath, we'll talk about how great Baker Mayfield is. Or missing the fact that Oklahoma was holding teams to like under 25 points a game before that.
Yeah,
so
I'm going to say Oklahoma State wins. I want Iowa State to win, but Oklahoma State's going to win. But they don't cover the 6.5-point spread. I think it's like a 3-point win.
Oh, okay. That's at noon on ABC or ESPN2. At noon as well, Texas Tech, a 7.5-point favorite on the road, Baylor. I mean, this is going to be not on the road. They're technically the road team, but they're playing in AT&T Stadium in Arlington for the Butt Bowl. Who comes away victorious in this game? Both teams with 1 win in conference play.
As much as I hate to say it, I feel like Baylor's going to win. Texas Tech's kind of like they've driven the car off the cliff. There's no pun there. I really think this might be Cliff's last year in Lubbock. Yep.
They might not be bowl eligible this season.
Which is crazy because it seemed like everything was going, you know, decently well for them early in the season. Yep. And they've careened off the cliff.
They haven't won a game since they played us. We sent them into a 5-game spiral. And they haven't recovered since then.
We are all too familiar with the 5-game spiral.
Yep.
Yeah, I think, God, I hate it, but I think Baylor wins and gets a second win on the season. Because Baylor hasn't been bad. They have talent, but they're Baylor,
and that's what people forget about Baylor. They're talented. Yeah.
They're just young.
All right. Yeah, they are. They're young and experienced, but they have talent. They've still been recruiting well. 6:00, Kansas at Texas on the Longhorn Network. Texas is a 34-point favorite against Kansas. Can Texas score 34 points?
Against Kansas, I would say so.
Okay. Defense is all right. I don't know if Kansas is – that's another team that's just, like, spiraled out of control. They looked relatively decent, and we got them as the first conference game, and it was like, oh, crap, Kansas might be decent this year. They clearly look really bad. Let's see. Yeah. 34 points. The over-under is 55. So, I mean, if you're betting on the over-under, you're and also taking Texas. That means Kansas isn't scoring many points at all either.
They're saying, 35-20? I don't think Kansas is going to score 20 points.
No, I don't think they will break 10. I just don't think Kansas is very good. And then people will make it out like Texas is this great team, and really it's just because Kansas is bad.
I think we're looking at like a 35-9 game or something.
Okay, that
makes
sense.
Which means Texas doesn't cover the 34-point spread.
Yeah, which I mean that's still a lot of points to be honest. All right, the big one, 8:00, Fox on Fox, regular Fox, number 6 TCU versus number 5 Oklahoma. Both teams at 8-1, 5-1 in the conference. Oklahoma is a 6.5 point favorite at home. It's a 62-point over-under, and I got to say, if it goes on the over, Oklahoma wins. But if TCU can keep this game in the 30s, I think they have a good chance. Who wins this? This is the Big 12 championship. I think the winner of this game skyrockets up to number 3 in the college football playoff rankings, in my opinion, should, and has a clear path to the Big 12 championship game. Who takes advantage of this opportunity?
Sadly, I think Oklahoma has it. TCU hasn't looked as great as they did, you know, to start the season over the last two games or three games or whatever. And we're just going to hear more hype about Baker Mayfield and how he's the best quarterback and blah, 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 blah. And it's going to annoy me to no end.
Just keep showing the gif of his head slamming into a concrete wall. It makes me feel better.
Yeah, so I think Oklahoma
wins. I agree.
And they'll probably cover, too.
Ultimately, I think that's good. I think that's good for the Big 12 at the end of the day. Because if Oklahoma beats TCU, it clearly says, hey, we're a good team. Put us in the college football playoff ranking, like in the college football playoff top 4. Now, granted, who knows what happens between Miami and Notre Dame. That could also affect things. But you can't tell me that Oklahoma beating TCU and Ohio State is better than, like, that is a better resume than Clemson, who hasn't looked great, lost to a really, really bad Syracuse team, and hasn't played well the past couple seasons weeks. And other than Auburn, they haven't really beaten anybody. Sure, they beat Virginia Tech. I don't know if they're that great. I have a lot of feelings on the college football playoff rankings right now. I think they're valuing wins more than losses, and I don't mean you get like quality losses, but you need to look at like who teams lost to. Like they're like, oh well, you know, Clemson beat Auburn and Virginia Tech. Yeah, well, they lost to Syracuse. I don't know. I'm just a little annoyed by it. But those are the picks.
I have problems with Iowa State being ranked 21.
And we're not ranked?
Yeah, we're not even like – yeah.
Yeah. Again, because they're looking at who have you beaten. Well, oh, great, you beat Oklahoma at TCU. It's like, yeah. Well, they also lost to Texas. And, I mean, granted, they lost to an Iowa team that, you know, looks pretty decent and just beat Ohio State. But, like, I don't know how they're valuing wins versus losses here.
They don't know how they're evaluating wins versus losses. We say the same thing like every season.
Yeah. This is why the BCS, like as much as people hated it, I think it would have been fine if you would have said, hey, the BCS picked the top 4 best teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then let it go. But what do I know? All right. So that's all the Big 12 talk we have for you. By Godders, thanks for listening to this episode of the Smoking Musket Podcast. Thanks to Grant Tommy of the Salute Podcast and to our friends at Bring On The Podcast for having me on earlier this week. WVU Kansas State kicks off at 3:30 p.m. from Manhattan, Kansas on ESPN2. Mike, where are you going to be watching the game?
I will be watching from my recliner.
Awesome. The best seat in the house.
Yes.
All right. Well, you can catch the Smoking Musket Podcast every Friday before the games on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio. Also, www.blogtalkradio.com/smokingmusket or www.smokingmusket.com. You can catch me, Bart, on the Smoking Musket Facebook Live review every Monday at 9 p.m. to talk about the game that we just had. Thanks for listening, and for now,
goodbye, buddy. Hope you find your dad.